All right. Good afternoon and welcome. My name is Aaron Gustafson, and I'm a web standards and accessibility advocate here at Microsoft. And I'm here to talk to you about progressive web apps. But before I tuck into all of that, I wanted to just give a shout out to this very digitized skipping video that we're seeing now of an expense tracking app called Expense Manager by the folks at Vadin. And I do a lot of traveling, as I'm sure most of you did to get here and such, and keeping track of expenses is really tough. I like that this app has a really nice overall user experience to it. It's very smooth, very fluid, snappy, and so on and so forth. It's also nicely cross-platform. It works well on mobile and over on desktop as well. And you have that same sort of consistent UX over on the desktop space. Obviously, more screen real estate to work with, a little easier to read these massive tables of expenses. But clearly, they paid a lot of attention to detail in the creation of this app on both of these form factors, which is really nice to see. And what might be surprising to some of you is that even with all of this integration with like the file manager and all that sort of stuff, this is actually a web app. And in fact, it's a progressive web app. So you can play around with this if you're interested at demo.vadin.com/expense-manager. It's pretty neat. And there's a demo login and all that sort of fun stuff. And I think that's a really good example of what exactly a progressive a progressive web app is. Now, some of you may not be familiar with the term progressive web app, so I want to take a few minutes to kind of level set everybody on what exactly a progressive web app is, just so I make sure that we're all on the same page. Now, you'll hear me use the terms progressive web app and PWA interchangeably throughout this talk. So I just want to kind of call that out briefly. And I want to start actually by ignoring the first bit, progressive, and focus on that web app bit. We'll return to the progressive bit momentarily. But for a lot of us, when we think about web apps, we have certain ideas of what that is, right? It's software. It's something that you use to complete a task, like the expense manager that we saw. But really, a web app could be anything. And it could be a game, it could be a book, it could be a newspaper. Web apps in this context could really be any website. It doesn't really matter what the content or the purpose is of that website, but the web app moniker is applicable to all of them. In reality, it could have been simply progressive website, and it would have been just as meaningful. And it might be helpful just to think of it as such. This isn't just for somebody who's creating desktop-like software. This could really be for anything. It could be for your blog. It could be for your portfolio site. It could be your resume. It doesn't need to be a single-page app. It doesn't need to be all rendered client-side. There are no particular requirements about the type of PWA that you're creating. So that's something to kind of point out. And what progressive web apps do is it basically takes a website and it enhances it. It makes it capable of becoming native-ish. So it's not exactly a native app, although it may behave like one. It's got a lot of the wonderful characteristics of being on the web as well and of the web. And I'll get into some of the stuff in a little bit more detail. So it's really got kind of the best of both worlds going on there. If you've looked at or done any development with hosted web apps, which is something we introduced in Windows 10, this kind of is a follow-on for that. And it shouldn't be very difficult for you to actually convert your existing hosted web app over into being a progressive web app. And in doing so, you'll get a lot of extra goodies for free. But I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. So here's a quick comparison of the native Twitter app and Twitter Lite as seen on an Android device. And you'll notice that from a quality, a polish standpoint, and the user experience perspective, that they're pretty much indistinguishable, right? And this is just the first iteration of Twitter Lite. They literally launched it last month, okay? The only real difference here is that one of these was built using native technologies, and one of these was built using web technologies. And that's pretty impressive. Bless you. And Alex Russell was the one who coined the term progressive web apps and defined the principles for their development, which I'll get to momentarily. But I think it's important to emphasize the idea that the web as native is not really a new concept. It's something that's actually been around for quite a while. Those of you who've been working on the web and building software and stuff like that for a while might remember back in 2007, Adobe gave us the Adobe Integrated Runtime, Adobe Air, which actually let designers and developers build apps, like first-class apps, for desktop systems using either Flash or HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, which was pretty amazing. And they supported things like drag and drop into your app and menu bar integration and file management and a ton of other stuff that has since become part of the HTML5 spec and part of these standards that we have for the web now, which is pretty cool. And that was pretty early. In 2009, Palm introduced WebOS, which was an entire operating system built on web technologies. And in fact, all of the software that you wrote for WebOS was based on HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, which was pretty amazing at the time. Unfortunately, it never really went anywhere, but it is sort of seeing a resurgence in the smart TV, the smartwatch, and IoT space. So it may be back from the dead at some point. And other OSs have begun to, or have over time, it sort of brought the web more into being a first-class citizen. In Windows 8, we introduced the ability to build apps using HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, and put those in the web store or in the Windows Store, which is pretty cool. Firefox OS, Chrome OS, obviously those are built with the web through and through, the whole operating system being built upon the web stack. And then countless tools have followed Adobe's lead with Air and made or created offered ways for designers and developers to realize their visions using web technologies to create installable software. So things like Cordova, PhoneGap, React Native, and so on and so forth. And using those, they can reach the majority of the operating systems out there. So obviously, there's something to building native using web technologies, right? There's something to the web. And progressive web apps are a brilliant way of standardizing an approach to building websites that are capable of becoming native for our users. And for the folks in the back, just really quickly, there are some seats up here. There are some seats in the middle. If you don't want to be standing, feel free to come up and pick up some space. There's 5 seats that have reserved on them, but I'm just going to invite you up to sit up here if you're interested, because nobody's sitting on them, so they are no longer reserved. All right, so let's take a look at what it means for a PWA to be a PWA. What makes them tick? So when Alex Russell defined a PWA, he defined 10 characteristics that are indicative of this kind of next generation, this new breed of web applications. The first of them was being progressive, which means that it works for any user regardless of their browser choice because it's built with progressive enhancement in mind. Now, I'm going to circle back to progressive enhancement in a minute because it's a fairly large thing to unpack. So we'll kind of skip over that momentarily. PWA should be responsive, meaning that they fit any form factor. So whether it's mobile, whether it's on a tablet, whether it's on a smartwatch, whatever, basically the content should fill the container and provide the best possible experience that it can, reading experience or otherwise. Network independent. We should be able to deal with flaky networks. We should be able to provide a good experience in the absence of a network connection. This is something we can do with Service Worker, which we'll talk a little bit about shortly. Should be app-like. So the overall user experience, the responsiveness, it should feel very nice, very much like a piece of native installed software. It should not feel clunky. Right. It should have a smoothness to it. Should be fresh, meaning that when you boot it up, it can be up to date with the latest information. This is something that Service Worker can also do by updating content in the background, which is pretty neat. Safe. PWAs need to be delivered over SSL, over HTTPS. And that ensures that we don't have snooping taking place, nobody's modifying your content, and so on. They should be discoverable, or they are discoverable. They can be found via a link. They can be found in a store, potentially. There are a bunch of different ways that they can be found and identified by users, and the signals for identifying a PWA in that sort of context is having a web app manifest, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, and having a service worker. Those are two kind of technical identifiers for this for a PWA. PWAs are re-engageable, so they're capable of bringing users back into the application. Right now, this means via notifications in some way. That may get expanded over time, but ways to bring people back and to keep them engaging with the app. Installable, meaning that somebody can actually have it completely offline outside of the browser. They might get that independent of an app store, or they might get it via an app store, depending on the situation that they're in. And then finally, linkable. So they can be easily shared via a URL. So I want to tuck into the installable bit briefly, because I think that's the piece that really sets PWAs apart from a standard website or our general concept of what a website is. And many people might view this as a continuation of that competition between web and native, but I really don't think that it is. I don't think of these two things as being competitive so much as being choices, right? We should choose our development approach based on the needs of our project, of the team that we have, the budget for the project, and so on. And it's good to have options, and both approaches have strengths and weaknesses. Now, often web tech gets sort of dismissed for not having the capabilities of native apps, but that's changing rather rapidly. If you wanted to, you could fire up whatwebcando.today, which is a website that will tell you, based on the browser that you're currently in, what APIs you would have access to. And you might be surprised with what you find. Like geolocation you may be used to, but offline storage, file access, full screen, orientation and lock, those sorts of things. It's pretty interesting. And that will obviously continue updating as more and more of these APIs roll out. And ultimately, if the user experience is really good, does it matter what the underlying technology is? I'm not really sure that it does. The only place that I can really see it mattering is when it comes to thinking about the time to market and the cost of building and maintaining the app, but mostly the time to market piece is what really interests me specifically. So when you're building kind of a native and web approach, in sort of this traditional way, you have this core API typically, and then the apps are designed and developed independently. The website, obviously, you host that. That's how you get that out there. But then with each individual app, you have to build it and then submit it to the store and build it and submit it to the store. And that all takes time. And not only can it delay your app getting out there, but it can delay you getting updates to your users. Maybe you have a security fix that you want to do to your app, and you have to update each of these platforms independently, which takes development time, obviously, and then you have to submit them to the store and get them through the process of doing so, of getting out to your users. And hopefully they have auto updates turned on. Now, in contrast, if you built a PWA, if you focused on building the web-based product first and built it with all of the characteristics of a PWA, you can build it once, and then it deploys automatically to all of these different platforms, because that PWA becomes available in all of those spaces. And even if you do opt to put your PWA in a store, you would only really need to manage that submission once, and then it would automatically update because it's the web. And we've got that fresh component, which is really nice. So that's a huge benefit. Now let's circle back to the beginning, to that progressive aspect of PWAs. So obviously, progressive is an important part, and it's an important facet of what a progressive web app is. It's the first word in the phrase, right? So progressive, as I mentioned in this context, refers to progressive enhancement. If you're unfamiliar with the idea, here's just kind of a quick analogy. Now, I'm a music and film fan, so I'm going to focus on sound for this analogy. And back in the early days of recordings, we only had a single speaker, or if you want to go back further, we only had a single horn on a Victrola, right? One source for the sound in order to get it to our ears. Now, around about the 1930s, stereophonic sound was invented to address an issue that came up when the early talkies were being done and you had multiple speakers playing the same sound through them. And you might have an actor over there, but because you're sitting over here, you're hearing them talk over here, which is really weird, right? The voice is completely disembodied from the person. So stereophonic sound was developed in order to enable that person's voice to actually follow them on the screen. Now, that was a great enhancement to the listening experience and to the movie-going experience, but it could easily be listened to on a single channel as well as the two channels could be mixed together. You weren't limited to only being able to hear it as stereo. Now, over time, stereophonic gave way to quadraphonic or surround sound, and we just kept adding more and more channels, right? Anyone have this in their living room? Just 16.22? How about 22.2? Anybody getting ready for Ultra HD television? That's 22.2 sound. That's crazy. But you know, sometimes all you have is mono, right? Like a Bluetooth speaker, a single Bluetooth speaker, that's in most cases mono. Your phone, when you're watching a movie sideways, you know, landscape mode, your speakers are only on one side. You're pretty much hearing it, even though it is technically stereo, you're hearing it as mono, right? So even though there are these great enhancements that we've had to being able to hear and experience sound, it's still usable on a single speaker, which is pretty amazing. And that's the way that we should be thinking about how we build experiences, especially on the web, because the web supports it really well. So we start with whatever the core purpose, the core experience of the app that we're building or of the site that we're building. So the core purpose and the task that a user needs to accomplish, we want to make sure that those are always available regardless of the device that a user is on, the browser that they happen to be using, the limitations of their network maybe, or maybe the limitations that they themselves have, like, you know, not great vision, or I have poor hearing as well. We want to make sure that people can still check their bank balance or, you know, load up a movie on Netflix or something like that. It doesn't mean you can't create a better, more enhanced experience for somebody who has the capacity to take advantage of that. In fact, you should be looking to do that. We should be looking to create experiences that grow as our users are more capable of taking advantage of different opportunities. But the important thing is that we never create barriers to our users being able to access and use our products. And yes, and this is a topic for a whole other talk, it does mean having an experience that works without JavaScript. Because things happen, right? So with progressive enhancement, we build a baseline experience and then we improve it as we're able to do so. So in practical terms, progressive enhancement ensures that people can use your product regardless of unsupported browser or device features or maybe network issues that block or delay important assets. Anybody remember when Sky inadvertently blocked jQuery from all their UK people? That kind of sucked. Browser plugins that might cause interference with your JavaScript or with CSS. Third-party code that might interfere with that sort of stuff, proxy browsers that might optimize or adjust your code, hotel Wi-Fi or airplane Wi-Fi that might inject stuff, or airport Wi-Fi, all sorts of things get injected, ads and such. Or when users might need to use alternate input methods to access the content on your site. We should be thinking about all of this sort of stuff and building really robust experiences that make sure that our users can do what they came to our site to do, right? That's the whole reason we built it. We should make sure that people can actually use it. So I want to walk you through, just from a technical standpoint, just a really, really simple example of how progressive enhancement can work. And I'm gonna do so using just a basic input field that's required, an email input field. So here's the basic input field. Now the email field type was introduced in HTML5. So older browsers don't support it, right? They don't know what to do with type equals email. And so they fall back to the default input type, which is type equals text. And that's all right because that's what users had for the first 15 years of the web, right? We didn't have that email input type at all. And even if a user's device does support it, the support might vary based on the implementation. So they may have support for the email input type, but maybe their validation algorithm doesn't actually validate for whether or not it's a valid email address. That has been the case in the past. Maybe the user's in a context where they get a virtual keyboard. Maybe they're not. Right? These are all enhancements to that core experience of just being able to enter your email. Right? Now, the required field, this is something else that was introduced in HTML5. And based on whether the browser supports the validation algorithm, it may or may not actually work as you would hope that it would, and required that field before the user can submit the form. And then ARIA required is a way that we inform assistive technology using ARIA, the Accessible Rich Internet Application spec, that this field is, in fact, required. Now, in this case, we actually have two different potential deltas. We're relying on the browser actually knowing what to do with ARIA required and exposing that to assistive technology. And then we have to hope that the assistive technology actually knows what to do with that. So there's a lot of potential variance just in this one element, right? This one tag. So returning to the thing here. I think my phone alarm's going off. I'm sorry. Actually, there we go. It's a phone call. Somebody's calling me. All right, so if we were to plot the experience along this chart here, we start with that basic text input, and then an enhancement to that is that this field is required, right? Then we might actually validate, or rather, we notify the user that it's required. That's the assistive technology piece, the ARIA bit. Then maybe we actually validate for whether that field is required, whether it's been filled out like it needs to be. And then we validate for whether it's a valid email address. That's another enhancement. And then like probably the best experience overall would be to have all of those and that virtual keyboard, which would be pretty awesome too if we're in that sort of context where we need to quickly enter an email address and we don't have a physical keyboard to work with. So that's a very simple example of progressive enhancement. As I mentioned, progressive enhancement ensures that people can use your product no matter what. Now, you could just as easily swap in PWA for PE in this instance, right? Because we have that network awareness and independence, we're able to render a page without network connectivity. We're able to potentially lower the costs for our users to access our sites because we can manage caching and refreshing of content and only pull in exactly what it is that we need. Hopefully, we don't do things like stuff the cache with things that we don't need that are very large and expensive to download. We have access to additional APIs within the operating system, which is a nice enhancement to a website, to be able to tap into contacts or notifications or calendar or something like that. And then we also have more ways of our site or our app-like experience to get discovered by users. Obviously, they can be shared via a link, but they can also be found in search and identified as an app in search. They could potentially be found in stores as well. And then the two technical linchpins that I mentioned earlier, the Web App Manifest and Service Worker, are ignored if they're not understood. This is one of the kind of hallmarks of progressive enhancement and the web in general, at least HTML and CSS. Browsers are instructed to ignore anything that they don't understand. So in the case of that input earlier, if the browser didn't understand type equals email, it fell back to the default input type. It ignored what it didn't understand and became just a default text input. In the same way, if a browser doesn't support Service Worker and you actually test to make sure that Service Worker is supported before you try and run it, then the browser will just ignore the fact that you're trying to do this thing with something called Service Worker that has no idea what that is, and it'll go on its merry way. It won't get any of the benefits of using Service Worker, which we'll talk about in a minute, but people will still be able to interact with that site, which is pretty awesome. So these are all, by definition, progressive enhancements as well. Now, I've mentioned Service Worker a few times here, so it probably makes sense to do a little sidebar and talk about what Service Worker is. So a Service Worker is a proxy spawned by JavaScript that can handle a variety of different tasks. most of which involve the network. So it can manage an offline experience. It can intercept and respond to or modify network requests. It can manage caching. It can handle and it can receive and handle push notifications, and it can also handle background sync requests, which is pretty cool. So service workers are crazy magic, and they're really, really quite interesting. Now, I want to invite one of my colleagues, Jeff Berthoft, up here to give a little bit of a sense of how service workers work and the impact that they can have on your applications.
That's right. Does he have anyone who is excited about
can we get his mic?
Workers here?
Oh, there we go. So let's did I get the right one? Here we go.
There we go. So one of the things that we get to show you today is service workers running in Edge. This is the first time actually publicly that we're showing this. So you kind of all get to be part of the experience to see it first. And as Aaron mentioned, service workers are a very key component to building progressive web apps, to having a lot of that native type of functionality. So I'm going to tell you what I'm doing here, and I'm going to start off with just a local host here. Now you know, you might or might not know that service workers require HTTPS. That's one of the things, one of the standards we want to make sure that we're running on a secure endpoint. But for us developers, we have leeway to also allow them to run on localhost. So that's what I'm showing you today. And I'm starting off with a simple example here because I want to just really break it down to the basics. I have a web page with a picture of a dog. So that's it. What do you think? No, I'm just kidding. There's more. There's more to it. And what I know each of you are thinking when you look at this picture of a dog, you're thinking, yes, it's very cute, but we're really here to see pictures of kittens, right? And that's the power of service workers, okay? So to add a service worker to your website, you start by allowing the service worker to register. Now, typically when you add a JavaScript file to a site, you're doing a script tag and you reference that. Well, in this case, what we're doing is we're just doing inside a script tag. We're going to do a navigator.serviceworker.register, and we're going to point to our service worker file. Now, I'm going to save that and make that change. Now, inside the service worker, we're doing a few things. The very first thing we're doing is we're doing an install of this service worker. So this is a one-time thing for this service worker. Every time you have a new service worker, it'll go through a new install stage. And then it's going on and we're going to add some pre-caching inside of here. And pre-caching is going to go out and it's going to go collect whatever files you want to bring in so that they're already there for your site. And in this case, I'm using an add all because I can do an array here. It's an array of one because it's a kitten. We only need one picture of kitten. This is the best part too. All right, there we go. The other key point is that we are then going to catch the network events. So Aaron explained that this is a proxy. It sits between what happens on our page and what happens on our server. So that's really important because I don't have to change the code on my page to use service workers. I'm just making network requests like I always do. And every time I make a network request, it's going to fire an event that I'm going to respond to that's called fetch. Okay, so I'm going to capture that fetch event. I'm going to make sure it's not my HTML page and just going to assume anything that's not HTML should automatically be turned into a kitten instead. So I'm going to catch that, and then instead of letting it go back to the server to get the picture of the dog, I'm going to stop it, pull my picture of the kitten from the cache, and hand it over. So I'm going to do a refresh here. And then I should be able to click it, and that's the magic. What do you think? This is service workers running inside of Edge. Now, this is very early build. I want to tell you that. I talked with the developers, like, hey, what can I show? What's going to work right now and what's not? I'm going to give it a try and see if we can open the F12 tools, because I think that's really interesting to see what's going on in there. When I go into my debugger, you can see I have my service worker. It tells me what's registered. I have my cache. It tells me what's inside of my cache. So I'm able to work with this service worker just like all the other files on my website, which means now you're managing even this network aspect of your stack from your web server. It's published to your website. You need to change it. You just go make a change in your website, and it reflects in your application. So there it is. Service worker is a very key component of our progressive web apps. Aaron?
Thanks, Jeff.
All right. Thank you very much. So now that we've kind of set the groundwork for what PWAs are, I want to discuss how they fit into the Windows ecosystem. So as I mentioned earlier, Windows has a history of supporting web tech, but it even predates Windows 8. Back in Windows 7, some of you might remember, we began supporting what were called pinned sites. And they enabled developers to customize kind of a sticky tab in the taskbar that provided quick access to key tasks, a customized browser UI, and more. And then, as I mentioned, we got packaged web apps, so apps written in HTML, CSS, and JavaScript in Windows 8. Then in Windows 10, we introduced hosted web apps, which enabled you to run wholly web-based products and distribute them via the store, via the Windows Store. And now we're in the process of taking that support of the web to the next level with progressive web apps. So in terms of the work that's necessary to bring PWAs to Windows, the engineering team has already done quite a bit of this work. We've got the Fetch API, which has already shipped. We've got the hosted web app container, which has existed since hosted web apps were introduced. And that already provides a secure, discrete container for web apps within Windows. And then via WinRT, we actually have those JavaScript APIs for interacting with things like Calendar, Contacts, Cortana, and more, all from JavaScript, which is pretty cool. And then we began work on Service Worker about a year ago, and Jeff has showed you, kind of where we are in up-to-date fashion right now as far as building out Service Worker. We're getting there. We're making great progress on PWAs within Edge and Windows, and support for these three remaining technical linchpins of PWA in Edge and Windows are coming to the Windows Insider program early this summer. So that's pretty exciting. Initially, these features will be behind a flag, and that's just in order to enable us to kind of work out any kinks that we might have. It allows you to explicitly opt into using this technology and to start working with it. Once PWAs are fully supported, they will use the same container technology, as I mentioned, as hosted web apps do. And this container is really well-defined, and it's established, and it's got excellent performance and a ton of other benefits. The ones that are really kind of key in my mind are they run independent from the browser process, okay? They have an isolated cache, they have less overhead, and they give you nearly unlimited storage. Now, yes, if you start loading like gigabytes and gigabytes of data, at some point the OS is gonna either keel over or it's gonna start throwing some stuff out, but you get a lot of storage to be able, all of the limitations that you would have for local storage, for IndexedDB and such within the browser, all of those go away. And then, of course, you have the access to the Windows runtimes, you have offline and background processes, and so on and so forth. In many ways, progressive web apps are hosted web apps evolved within Windows. And you could easily build your PWA today, even though we don't have those three final pieces in place right now. You could take a PWA that you are building, that you go home from this session and build today, and ship that as a hosted web app right now. And then when the remainder of the PWA stack lands in Windows, it will automatically light up as a PWA within that hosted web app shell. So it'll automatically pick up the service worker capability and so on and so forth, which is pretty awesome. So you probably have some questions, like, how does a user discover a progressive web app? So let's tuck into that a little bit. Right now, and this is still sort of early thinking, and a lot of us are still trying to figure this stuff out, we're going to have two ways, two primary means, apart from just being link sharing and stuff like that, that users are going to find PWAs, discover PWAs. They'll be able to find them within the Windows Store, and they will be able to find them within Search. And they will be installable from either of those places. So being able to install right from the browser when you find a PWA in the search results. Channel Line, unfortunately, is not a PWA yet. This is somewhat wishful thinking, but hopefully in the not too distant future. Some of you might be wondering, like, why would I care about bringing a website to the store, right? The web is pretty awesome, and the web offers a lot. So why should my PWA find a place in the store? And from our perspective, there's numerous benefits to this, really. First of all, we care about the web, and we really want to put the web on equal footing with native, because we think it's just as valid of a development approach to building apps as native is. Also, stores provide an alternate means of discovery, right? People see, people browse for software that they need through the store, and being able to give some visibility to a product that you built, even if it may exist on the web, is a good thing. It's another avenue to bring new potential customers to you. Users are generally more comfortable with downloading and trusting software that's been reviewed for quality and safety. It's becoming a big thing with malware and such. So having the store presence gives them that additional sense of security in terms of that's a quality piece of software that they're downloading that's not going to have malicious code in it. And additionally, for you as developers, you get additional insight into how your users are interacting with your apps. Beyond web analytics, you also get information like reviews, you get ratings, you get analytics concerning installs, uninstalls, performance, that sort of stuff that you wouldn't get if it was solely running on the web. So a couple of additional benefits. And kind of finally, in this area, having a store where users download software reduces the cognitive overhead of tracking different sources for installing software. So that becomes a much more helpful thing from a user experience perspective as well. It doesn't mean your site won't be discoverable and installable via the web. This is just another means of being able to access the products you create. So PWAs will find their way into the Windows Store in one of two ways. The first is through what's called active submission. And I'm going to invite Jeff up here again to walk us through the process of building a PWA, just a very basic PWA, and then submitting it to the Windows Store using an open source tool that he works on called PWA Builder.
Okay. All right, so I want to start on the web, because that's where we're starting with our progressive web apps. As Aaron mentioned, it's really important to us that the model of the web isn't broken, that the things that you're doing for the web today, the way that you're building those applications, are the same way that you continue to build progressive web apps. When you have discovery of your application, you want all the channels that you can possibly have, which means you don't want to stop using the web. You want to continue to use the web, but then you want to add store channels and progressive web apps and downloads and link sharing and Bing search results and all those type of things on top of it. So one of the things that we're doing at Microsoft to try to help developers transition from web content, from websites, to progressive web apps is a project that we call PWA Builder. And I'm going to walk you through how to do that today, because it actually makes it real easy for you to publish on the Windows platforms and on other platforms as well. So the app that I'm going to demo with today is one that I built called South Ridge Video. And we actually find that a lot of media companies are looking to web technologies to become the mechanism that they use to build applications cross-platform. I was just talking with Francisco here about Netflix and how they've kind of led that way with web being the environment that they utilize to build their applications. So I'm starting with this application, and the first thing I'll do is go to the PWA Builder site, and I need to start with building a manifest. Put in the HTTPS version of my site there. The manifest is really just the JSON object. And you see it on the right side of the screen here. What PWA Builder is doing is it's going to go to your site and it's going to kind of scrape your content, look at all of the different images that you have there, whether you have a favorite icon or you have an icon for your iOS tile or those type of things. It's going to pick all that stuff up and bring it in and automatically generate it into the manifest. We're going to look at your name. We're going to look at the description if you have it in there. And then we put it all together for you to then easily add it to it or change it. So this is a great video site. That's my description. Now, one of the hard things about building this JSON object is actually all the different image sizes that you need. So I'm going to use our tool here to generate those icons for me. And I think I have one already here. Yes. We'll upload that. And what it's going to do, it's going to generate some of the key sizes that you need for each of the platforms. So Android has a couple that they recommend. iOS has a couple that they recommend. Windows has some that they recommend. So we're just going to generate all of them and build all of the JSON there for you. Now, the next component that you are going to want for your PWA, now that you're already HTTPS, you have a manifest, now you want a service worker. So a lot of folks are starting new with service workers now, and we're trying to build an easy interface for them. Unfortunately, I only have a few selections on the screen here and now, but coming in the next week or two, we're going to expand this quite a bit, where we have a few different ingredients for your service worker that you can choose from. So one of the things that you want to make sure is that maybe your site can work offline. Well, we can give you a service worker that is going to then cache all of the offline content for you. We'll have what you add to your site here, the register that we showed before, and then the service worker code that will, as your user goes through your site, just copy your request in the cache. That way, if they go back to it, they will, and they're offline, or they have poor network connection, your site is going to continue to work for them on any page that they've already previewed. Every time they go and visit the page again, it'll update, take the newest version, and stick it in the cache for you. So as I said, we'll have more and more of those options coming. So this is a service worker just to get you started. You're welcome to take these, to edit them, to make them your own, customize them for your site. And then the last step is where we talk about publishing. Now, publishing is something that's coming down the pipe for Windows and for Android. So they've made some, had a few blog posts out about what they're doing with their web APKs on Android, which we're going to make sure that we give you access to as well from this site. They haven't released that yet, so we have a polyfill for Android. We also have polyfills for iOS and for macOS and Windows 7. So we'll use other tools to wrap your progressive web app and ship it on platforms that don't yet support progressive web apps. What I want to show you specifically, though, is what happens for the Windows Store. The first thing I want to do is I'm going to download my package here so that I can kind of show you what is being generated in the background. And we'll extract that. Now, I'm going to have the manifest that is submitted to the store on your behalf here. It also, the images that you generate, of course, will ship down there with you as well. And I also give you this script that you can simply run by right-clicking. It's a PowerShell script. You don't have to have any tools installed on your machine for this. PWA Builder has a command line interface, which will do all this for you. But if you don't have that installed, you just run this script, and it will install the package right on your machine so you can see your web content running as a progressive web app. So here it is, my Southridge site web content running as a progressive web app. So let's say that you love it, you want to share it, you want to get it in the store. We've got a button here that you can push. Give us your information. You're going to add that manifest to your website, the service worker to your website, unless you already have them, but we'll pick that up here. And then whenever we can see that matched up, we'll go ahead and publish that to your site and send you a, or publish that to the store and then send you a link to that listing so that you can preview it and share it and even take ownership of it if you want. It's gonna be a real easy process. Now let me just take a moment and show you what you can do with that progressive web app or what your users can do with that progressive web app. It is like any other app on Windows. So when a user downloads a progressive web app from the store, they don't know they're downloading a progressive web app. To them, they're downloading an app. And that's the experience that we strive for. It should never be a user's decision as to what type of technology they're going for. They should just be looking for an application. So the same things that you would expect, I can pin it to the start. Oh, there it is there. I can choose different sizes for the tiles that I have. I can even uninstall it by right-clicking. It's easy to add, it's easy to remove, and it's not going to leave anything behind. So in all intents and purposes, it is a first-class application on Windows. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. So that's pretty awesome. Really, really cool stuff. So that's the active submission process. That's if you have the time, and it doesn't take that much time to do it. But obviously, we want Windows users to have access to as many quality apps as they can. And we understand that not all development teams have the time to submit and maintain their apps in the store. And so we've developed an approach to enable their apps to be easily discovered in the store, too, through what we're referring to as passive ingestion. Now, as part of this process, we'll use the Bing crawler to identify PWAs on the open web. We view a web app manifest as a proactive signal from the developer that they want their website to be considered as an app experience. And we're listening to that signal and evaluating it as a candidate for being in the store. And then we will automate the conversion of that PWA into the AppX format used by the store, and then assemble the store entry based on the metadata provided about the app in the web app manifest, which I'll get to in a moment. Now, we completely understand that some of you may not want us to passively consume your PWA and put it in the store. You want to control that for yourselves, and that's completely cool. We definitely respect that. By adding these two little lines to your robots.txt file, the Bing crawler will completely ignore your manifest file, and you'll have complete control over submitting it to the Windows Store when and if you want to. So definitely not trying to roll out there and just grab everyone's PWAs. You guys have complete control here. Now, our initial crawl looking for PWAs discovered a surprising 1.5 million manifests across 800,000 domains. And that's a surprisingly large number. But as we actually started to look at this selection of sites, we discovered that not all were actually good candidates for this ingestion process. First of all, some aren't PWAs to begin with, right? Some of them have a boilerplate manifest that maybe was created by a favicon generator that also generated the different app icons for iOS and Android and that sort of stuff. And so we're working on a set of criteria that'll help us to separate quality PWAs from sites that simply appear PWA-ish. And this is still early days in terms of this stuff, but some of those criteria that we're starting to put together is, A, does it have a manifest? We saw that already. But does this manifest suggest quality? So is it not a boilerplate that comes with, let's say, a WordPress install or something like that? Is there a name? Is there a description? Is there an icon that's at least 192 pixels square? Is the site secure, since that is one of the hallmarks of a PWA, as it needs to be served over HTTPS? Does the site have a valid service worker? That's another obvious hallmark of PWAs. Is the site popular? So there will be some taking into account and prioritization of sites that have high Alexa and Quantcast rates positions. Does this pass some automated tests for quality? So that might be, you know, some of that's still kind of to be defined, but some of that might be accessibility testing and other forms of automated testing. Is the app content free? In other words, is this something that somebody's going to have to potentially pay for? We're not going to go ahead and load a pay-for thing in automatically. Doesn't mean that you can't. have something that people pay for when you add a PWA to the store, though. This is just for the passive ingestion. And then finally, does the app pass manual review? So this is where we'll check to make sure that an app doesn't violate any laws and doesn't violate any store policies. And then finally, as Jeff mentioned, once the apps are in the store, developers of those apps that have been sort of passively ingested into the store will be able to claim them and take complete control over the way that the apps look and feel. Now, whether by manual submission or this passive ingestion process, the manifest will provide the bulk of the information that's used for the listing in the store. So things like the name, the description, the icon, and the screenshots all can be rolled up in your web app manifest. And PWAs will appear right alongside native apps in the store with no differentiation whatsoever. Because from a user's perspective, a PWA will just be another app. Right? Again, wanting to put web and native on equal footing. And from an installation standpoint, as Jeff showed, PWAs install and they'll uninstall just like any other app out there. All right, so after all of this, you guys probably have some additional questions. You may be wondering, okay, should I forget everything I know and start building a PWA? No. Progressive web apps are just one more way that you can build a quality app experience. They're just another option. They're not a panacea. They're pretty awesome, but they're not the end of the world, right? Or it's not the end of the world if you can't do them. Is Microsoft going to drop support for some other language because we're all happy about PWA now? No, that's not going to happen. We're committed to supporting a breadth of different ways of building quality apps. Are progressive web apps the right choice for my project? Maybe. Right? When you're evaluating native app development in relation to progressive web apps, here are some of the questions that I recommend asking. Are there native features that the web can't offer that are completely critical to the success of my product? What's the total time and cost, or rather the total cost both in time and money, of building and maintaining individual platform-specific apps if I decide to do that? What are the strengths of your dev team? Or if you don't have a dev team and you're looking to hire one, how hard will it be to assemble a team to be able to build for all of the different platforms that you want to roll your app out to? How critical will immediate updates be, such as adding new security features? In other words, the choice between PWA and native should be evaluated on a case-by-case basis. It's not something where you should just say, we're only going to do this, because there may be situations where it doesn't make sense to do a PWA. If you're looking to craft an experience that takes full advantage of each platform that you release it on, and you want to agonize over every UX detail in order to differentiate your product, native might be the best choice for you, right? You may want to jump into Swift. You may want to jump into, Java and so on and so forth. If you're maintaining a product on multiple native platforms in addition to the web, and they're all, roughly the same in terms of look and feel and capabilities, it might make sense to just double down on that web and turn it into a PWA and then put it out to all those platforms, because then you're going to be, getting more bang for your buck. And if you're planning a brand new product and the web provides all the features that you need, especially once you consider the additional APIs that you get when it's installed, then PWA may be a faster, more cost-effective option for building your app. And then finally, should I consider progressive web apps as a solid option for developing software for Windows? Definitely. Thank you all very much. Here are a couple of other sessions that if you haven't seen, I highly recommend doing. You've already missed the Microsoft Edge one. That was a little earlier today, but that'll be on a video. And now I'm happy to take a few questions. I think we have 6 minutes left. So starting with a question up here. We've got a microphone over there, but if you want, you can just say it to me. I'll repeat it.
Can a PWA be pinned to the taskbar as opposed to the start screen?
Can a PWA be pinned to the taskbar as well as the start screen? Yeah, that was one of the menu items that you may have seen in the context menu when Jeff was clicking. You did have the ability to add it to the taskbar as well, just like any other app. Yes. A question over here.
What browsers are you expecting to support Service Worker?
What browsers are we expecting to support Service Worker? Well, it was invented at Google. They were the first ones to create it, and Service Worker is currently supported in Chrome and in Opera, so everything on Blink, and then Firefox supports it, and then Edge supports it in Safari. We've been given the intent that they're going to support it, or they're looking at it. They haven't committed yet, right? Is that, yeah, they haven't committed yet. But I'm imagining once the other browsers are all doing it that Apple will probably come along. So, but in the meantime, I mean, Washington Post released their PWA, and they actually saw an uptick in iOS usage of their PWA, even though it got no benefits from Service Worker, like significant increase, because the performance was just better overall and stuff. So, yeah, there's no harm in doing it right now. Yeah. Questions over here? No? Oh, yes, sorry.
If the site is authenticated, how the PWA builder will handle that?
If the site's authenticated, how will PWA Builder handle it? So I don't know, Jeff, do you want to talk about that a little bit, since that's your baby?
So we'll look at the public side of it. That's what we do. We'll go and we'll scrape it. However, that's one of the reasons why we'll give you the option to override anything that we find. So if it's not hitting the content that you want, you can just jump in there and fill it out.
But if it requires login, then you won't be able to even create a manifest or get all the resources. So we basically...
Are you talking like blocking it at like HTTP auth? Like you're blocking it at that point?
So it's Windows authentication or OAuth or whatever.
Yeah.
Right? So you won't even get to it to get all the content.
Yeah, I tell you, we're trying to get to as many sites as we can. You're right. There are going to be some sites that we just can't go out fish. Yeah. So you can... build it, you know, you can always build a manifest by hand or just type in the info there. And then when we go, if you decide to do store submission, that's another place where if it's behind a firewall, we'll communicate back and forth to try to get a test account or something, because if you're right, if we can't get in, we can't really validate.
So that's what we do today, create the manifest manually, all the icons and everything. So that takes lots of work out.
Yeah.
But with authentication, that's not possible.
With the command line version, would that be able to run from a local?
You can. You can run the CLI from a local tool if you want as well.
Yeah. So that would work. Run PWA Builder from the CLI.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just for the icon, what's the recommended size?
At least 192, I think, is the baseline that everybody's kind of generally agreed on.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Hardball.
Yeah. I want to put you on the spot about add to home screen prompting inside the browser, what Microsoft has planned. If you're going to do it, like what sort of heuristics you're thinking about, that sort of stuff.
I would say at this point, at least as far as I understand it, we're still evaluating how everything is going. And you know, we've been in conversation with our friends at Google as to how that's going for them and just kind of taking a look at the lay of the land. And I don't think we're ruling anything out at this point. But as far as I know, we haven't really committed to that because we haven't figured out exactly how we want to handle it yet within the desktop space. So this is the first volley, and then we'll kind of go from there. Yes.
All right. So two questions. So did I hear correctly that building the app, right, and making it available in the App Store, that's really not going to come until the next release of Windows or something like that?
So the first question is, does this mean that you won't be able to submit to the App Store until all of this lands? No, you will be able to. You could package it up using PWA Builder now and submit it to the Windows Store. And then once those features land, once Service Worker lands and the Cache API and all that sort of stuff lands, it will automatically light up that what is currently an HWA and turn it into effectively a PWA. So it'd still be installed, just like a hosted web app can be installed now. It just won't have the Service Worker piece yet. So that's the only kind of crippling piece right now for it. Yeah. So when you're using Service Worker, what are the challenges with respect to rolling back your code if you accidentally deploy something that breaks something? It's definitely a real thing that I've had happen myself and then been dealing with the cache. But Service Worker does have ways of versioning the cache. So you may have noticed in Jeff's code there was like a cache key. And you can rev that cache key. What I tend to do on my sites, I use a build process for my JavaScript, and I have a variable that gets updated basically when the build is taking place, and it swaps that key out as part of the cache name when the Service Worker is rebuilt, so that takes care of it. The other thing you want that's another gotcha is having a really long life on your Service Worker JavaScript file. because that could sit around in the cache and it may not recognize that there's a new service worker yet. So you want to set that really low, like 10 minutes or something like that, so that you don't run into situations like that. But it can definitely happen. You just need to be kind of aware of that. But there are mechanisms for overriding, for basically wiping the cache and starting fresh again. So yeah, definitely have thought about that. Yeah. So how does this relate to app cache and offline apps in HTML5? So Service Worker was designed to be a replacement for app cache because app cache has a lot of problems, and it's very tough to work with. Service Worker allows for a much more granular control of your cache, and is capable of doing so much more than app cache was ever capable of doing. So this is really a replacement to that. Yeah.
Yep. I'd add in, though, that there are other technologies like IndexedDB that very much will live on besides service workers because they have unique characteristics and unique use cases of their own.
And local storage and
local
stuff
storage,
like that as well.
Sure.
And we could use libraries like LocalForge to sit over the top of those in case.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in fact, what I've tended to do, depending on the project, is if I find that Service Worker isn't available, but local storage is, I might do some caching myself in order to speed up certain critical parts of a website. So you can certainly do that the same check that you may have seen in Jeff's code where it said if navigator.serviceworker or if Service Worker in navigator, depending on which way you want to go, and then do the Service Worker code. The else statement there could do something where it's doing local storage or doing IndexedDB or something like that. So you can completely have some fallbacks. So, and I've even seen some scenarios, I think, where people had app cache, but then Service Worker took over if app cache, like if it was available.
Only the brave.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that, but I've seen some people who've been like, oh, I'm going to provide an app cache version for people who don't have Service Worker, which that's the whole can of worms that I want to open. I think there was a question back there, yeah.
So I think I know the answer, but the PWA, will it have access to the hardware on a device, like a camera or something like that?
It all depends on what the question is. So will the PWA have access to the hardware? The answer is that it will if the APIs are available either within the standards, so there are standard ways of accessing camera, gyroscope, things like that, or if there are native APIs for things that haven't been standardized yet. And just for the record, on those native APIs that haven't been standardized yet, we're very aggressively tracking standardization of those sorts of things. So we had toast notifications before there was a web notification spec, but now using the web notification spec triggers what was toast notifications. So we're very much trying to focus on that standards track, but providing things when they're not there yet. So yes. Any other questions?
UWP performance, we submit to the store, it becomes bytecode, it's faster startup. Have we done any comparison?
So have we done comparisons of UWP versus PWA? I defer to Jeff.
So the PWA are leveraging all of the UWP technologies. So a little known, like you mentioned, that the first page is cached as bytecode, rather than files, is something that would be implemented as well. So if that's your service worker, if that's the first request, we'll just make sure that that's right pulled in as bytecode instead.
Great.
Yep.
Anyone else? Yes. How well does service worker play with Signal R? I have no idea what that is. So
I've seen demos. So I don't think it'll be problematic. The important thing to note about Service Worker is that it doesn't care what type of request you're making from the page. It's able to attach to all of them. So all of them go through it.
So if I'm offline, I would be getting all of my Signal R requests, even if I'm not online.
So you've...
You
can do that. One of the approaches that you would want to look at for that type of scenario is your page has some sort of awareness that there's an offline mode. So it can still send those requests off. If there's no network connection, then your service worker can then put them in the cache.
Yep.
Once it comes back online, sends it back. The part where your page is going to want to know is your page is expecting a response when it sends a request off to SignalR. So you want to be able to say, put something in your page that says, oh, I may get a message that I need to pass on to the user that this request will be sent once network connection has been reestablished.
Yeah, it's been added to the queue, and and that's what the background sync for Service Worker is, and it'll take care of like dealing with that stuff in the background. And then you could also do a notification to the user that that has completed successfully, especially if it's critical stuff. So how will PWA work with Roam?
Yeah, so PWA actually has all of the plumbing for Roam in there as well. Now, it's only going to work when it's inside of the app package, so when it's processed through the store. We don't have that in the browser yet, but if you have a pickup where you left off, you absolutely could do that with the PWA as well.
Anyone else? All right. Thank you all very much.